What will be the impact of President Trump's proposed budget right here in Utah?
Joining us live is Utah Congressman Chris Stewart. We have so much to talk about, Congressman. I guess we do start with the budget. And this is a blueprint, I would guess. And then you take this and make adjustments to it. But what do you make of this, what they call a skinny budget from the president?
Well, a blueprint is maybe even a generous description. It's barely an outline, and it's an outline of the administration's view. But Congress controls the power of the purse. Generally, that's where appropriations bills start, and they have a fair amount of say in how this ends up. It's a starting position to negotiate, and I think it's got some good news and some bad news. I mean, one of the primary reasons I ran for Congress was we were committing national suicide with our spending and our debt, and this is a real, genuine effort to take on that challenge. The bad news, in my opinion, is it doesn't take on entitlement spending, which is, if you're not willing to look at that, you're not really going to solve this problem, but I do think it's a good first step.
We've talked a lot, Congressman, since this budget came out yesterday morning, a lot about the cuts, the things that were going to be basically dismantled within Washington. What are some things that you look at that you say, oh, that's a very good idea?
Well, for example, the EPA, that's an easy one. I mean, the EPA has been so overreaching. They've become so powerful. And if you, in your introduction, you talked about things that affect Utah. Oh, my heavens, some of the proposals and some of the power that EPA has absorbed into itself would have had enormous implications for Utah. General Services Administration, even the State Department, those are some things that I think we could take a very careful look at and come up with some reasonable cuts. And keep in mind as well, for every dollar that we cut in these programs, we're going to use that money to rebuild our military, which is, after all, the primary responsibility of the federal government and something that has been decimated over the last few years.
But you're saying that we've got to look at entitlements like Social Security and Medicare, or we're not going to make any real progress. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've had dozens of people come into our office over the last few weeks, and they're concerned about some of these cuts that they thought would be proposed. And I mean, everything from CDC to USAID to research for cancer to arts. And I say to all of these friends, these people that we talk with, I say, look, if you want to help with funding on these issues that you're interested in, then help us solve the challenge with entitlement spending. It's 70% of the budget, and if you take 70% of the budget and say we're not going to touch that, we're not even going to consider looking at that, then you have this remaining 30%. I mean, these poor guys get their head beat in because they absorb these enormous cuts that could be dispersed otherwise. And by the way, Americans would support some of these ideas in entitlement reform. They've always said it's the third rail, you can't touch it, it'll kill you, and that's just not true. American people aren't stupid. They know that that there's some reasonable things that we could do that would fix these things. And for our children, if your option is, well, you can help us reform it, or Social Security just will not exist by the time you're at retirement age, the option is really clear for them. And, of course, they're going to say, well, fix it then. Go out and have the courage and make our decisions to actually fix this problem.
Let's move on right now to the GOP health care plan. What's your take on where things stand right now with what some are already calling either Trump care or Ryan care, I guess, really depending on who you are?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that the Republicans owned health care the day after the election. I mean, we ran on this idea that Obamacare was failing, and there's no question that it is. There's just no question about that. And that we could do it better. And I think most of us feel like we're just going to keep our head down. We're going to keep pushing on this, and we are going to do it. I like to see speculation in the press that it often exaggerates the divisions within the GOP. There are different ideas, and I've got some ideas that, some people don't agree with, and they have as well that I may not agree. But we are going to do this. We have to do it. We can't allow Obamacare to fail. That's unacceptable for people who are dependent on that. And the reality is we can do a better job at it. So I think we'll pass something in the next week or so.
If I could jump to one more topic, Congressman, on Monday in the Intelligence Committee, you have an open hearing on Russian active measures. And you're going to hear from James Comey and also the Director of National Security, Mike Rogers. What do you expect from that hearing?
Oh, I've been pressing for this open hearing for a long time because we have so many questions that in a classified setting we just can't address. And I think the American people want to know and deserve to know as much information as they can regarding this. But I was in Moscow last summer, and I know I've talked with you all about this. And when I came home, I said, look, Russia's going to mess with our elections. There's just no question about it, as they have in other European nations, as they're about to start, if they haven't already, in Germany, for example. But they've got to be just thrilled with the outcome. Because people would ask me, well, do they want, you know, one candidate over the other? And the answer was, no, they didn't. They just want to break down the trust, break down the institutions of democracy. And we've certainly had that, I'm afraid. But this hearing, it gives us a chance to answer some of these questions that Americans are wondering, to talk about, well, you know, was there actual meddling? And there certainly was. Did they prefer one candidate over another? We want to really dive into that and get a better answer than we've had so far. Talk about some of the, as you said, active measures, which is just simply propaganda, but it can go beyond that. I think it's going to be an interesting couple of hours for most people.
One final question, Congressman, while we've got you here on the phone. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is over in the South Korea area, the demilitarized zone. He's telling basically North Korea that the policy of strategic patience with North Korea is now over. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, our idea of strategic patience would that we would preclude North Korea from developing a nuclear weapon. And if that was our goal, then we failed. And part of the strategic patience now was we would preclude them from developing an ICBM with a nuclear-tipped missile that could reach the United States. And if that is our goal, then we are failing in that. So I do think it needs to be addressed in a different manner. And I'm not suggesting that we use military force. I think we're far from that. But I do think we need to, you know, have a more firm stand with North Korea. And by the way, we need to bring China into that conversation. China has enormous influence over North Korea. I think they are losing patience as well. And hopefully they can become a more helpful partner with us.
Congressman, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much.